It's time for us to get started, so if we can all get seated, then we'll go ahead and get this class started. The bell caught us right in the middle of where we were last week. I'm sure nobody in this class remembers what we're supposed to be studying unless you read the bulletin today or something like this. We're really going to study the two covenants, and the whole design is to look at the nature of the two covenants, to try to have a whole lot better understanding of it. And there's two or three reasons for this. It's not because we may not know these things already, but Peter says, when he writes 2 Peter, you already know everything that I'm going to tell you. I just want to stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance. In fact, 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3 is indicative of the fact that God had already revealed all of the Bible by the time Peter writes 2 Peter. Now, it may not all have been written down, but 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3 says, God has, past tense, given us everything that pertains to life and godliness. Peter's one of the last books of the Bible to be written. And yet he says, you already know these things. But I know I'm going to depart from this earth, and I want to stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance. And he just talks about things. He talks about the flood. It's amazing what he talks about. It's amazing what's in 2 Peter and the things that are found there. He talks about Sodom and Gomorrah. Isn't that amazing? Surely everybody knew about the flood and everybody knew about Sodom and Gomorrah and things of that nature. And yet, Peter says, you already know it. I want to remind you of it. When I was a younger preacher, I was of the mindset that every Sunday you got to come up with something new and exciting. And that lasted about 3 weeks. And then you run out of sermons, you know, especially once you get out of Christian college. You know, when I was a student at Freed Hardeman, going down and preaching these little country churches, they'd say, Brother Dan, would you teach your auditorium class? And I'd say, what book are you studying? And they'd say, we're studying Ephesians. And I said, I'd be glad to, because I took Ephesians last semester. But if they said, you know, we're studying Philippians, I'd say, you know, I'd just like to sit in that class and hear one of you men talk about that. I hadn't studied Philippians yet, okay? And so you know the things that we're talking about. Here's what we did last week. We asked everybody to get a pew Bible. I don't want you to use your own Bible. You can have two Bibles open. But I want everybody to have a pew Bible so we can talk about page numbers. We can get there in a hurry and everything. And that's where we're going to have. Last week, we started with that table of contents. And we said there's an Old Testament and there's a New Testament. Does anybody know how many books there are in the Old Testament? 39. How many books in the New Testament? 27. Now then, as you thought about there being 27 books in the New Testament, did you remember anything we talked about last week? The way when I remember things, I put them in crooked so they'll stick there. How many letters in the word old? 3. How many letters in the word Testament? 9. How many books in the Old Testament? 39. 3 times 9 is what? 27. So see, I just asked that to see if your mind is as weird as mine, and if that'll help you to remember it. I told a lady who's no longer at this church, she just astounded that I would ever even mention anything like that. And I said to her, I really love my way of remembering it better than your way of forgetting it, okay? And that's a part of it. Now then, look at that table of contents and get over to page number whatever, page number 3, and there's that first book. And just hitting the highlights, the name of that book is what? Do you have headings at the end before the word Genesis as the name of this book? Some Bibles, by the way, do not. And so it doesn't. These names of the books and these headings are not names of the books given by God, but it is described as the first book of Moses. Now, where does that come from? It comes from the Jews who had the Bible. Now then, would you like to guess what the name of Exodus is, the other name of Exodus? If the name of Genesis is the first book of Moses, what would you guess would be the name of the second book? Second book of Moses. Leviticus? Third, you're doing good. Numbers? Fourth book of Moses and Deuteronomy? Fifth book of Moses, all right, not last book. The fifth book of Moses. So you've got that. Where does that come from? Well, the Bible in the New Testament talks about Moses saying, or Moses writing, in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Quotes from the Old Testament and attributes that to Moses. And so based on the fact that we know beyond a shadow of a doubt, because the New Testament says Moses wrote Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and the Jews said that there are five books of Moses. We know for a fact four of them are from Moses. Then we have no hesitancy in saying Moses wrote the book of Genesis. Now then, the name Genesis means what? What language is Genesis? All of a sudden, everybody got quiet, okay? Some are saying Hebrew because what language was the Old Testament written in, generally? What language was the Old Testament written in? Hebrew. What language was the New Testament written in? Greek. What's the origin of the word Genesis? It is not a Hebrew word. It's a Greek word. And, we have the word Genesis in some English words. I was trying to think of an English word has Genesis in it. I can't get one to come to my head anyway that would be used with that we would readily understand. Genesis means what? It's the beginning. And so the book of the Bible begins unlike the way that you and I would begin the Bible. In all likelihood, we would begin the Bible by saying, let's talk about the existence of God. Let's talk about the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows His handiwork. And yet the Bible says in Romans chapter 1 verse 20 that knowledge can individuals can have, that there is that deity, there is that higher power, or better yet, there is that highest power by the creation of the world. And Romans chapter 1 verse 20 says, and anybody who denies that is without excuse. You would know that there was a higher power. You wouldn't know what He wanted you to do, but you would know of His deity, of His Godheadness, and of His power. And so Romans chapter 1 verse 20 talks about His eternal power and His Godhead or His deity. You'd know that. That's why in every culture there are people who worship. How do they do? Because it's obvious. You look at anything that exists, it has a maker. This watch has a maker. This building has a maker. And there's no explanation of this building other than somebody designed it, somebody built it. Now, if in the smallest things we see a maker, what about the big picture? If every part of the creation demands a creator, then what about the totality of it? And so the Bible begins, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Now that's not the only thing that begins in the book of Genesis. Everything begins in the book of Genesis. And sometimes in the teen class you can say, well, what began in the book of Genesis is almost like asking them, what animals did Moses carry into the ark with him? You know, I want two of the unclean and the clean animals by seven. That's the question. They'd say horses and cows and pigs and they just start naming the animals. So when you say, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, it's the beginning of what? Please don't just think horses and pigs and cows. It's the beginning of everything. Everything prior to this time, other than that which is eternal, or connected to heaven, has a beginning. And the book of Genesis answers one of the three fundamental questions we ask. Where did I come from? Thinking people have got to think about that. Now, there are only two answers. One is the highest power, Godhead, whoever that God is. And the other is matter is eternal. Those are only two possibilities. And that's why you have evolution, and that's the popularity of evolution. Because once I admit that there's some power that created this world, inherently there follows my responsibility to Him. If He's the highest power, then what does that make me? It makes me subject to the highest power. He's bigger than I am. And so that's why this ongoing battle that is being fought in America right now is raging so furiously. It is humanism versus deism. Is man the ultimate? Or is there something, someone above man? And so the Bible begins, in the beginning God created. And it's the beginning of all things. It's the beginning of sin. It's the beginning of the plan of salvation. It's the beginning of sacrifice. It's the beginning of the home. It's the beginning of language. I find that really interesting. My major field of study in college was speech. And it's rather interesting as you study the broad picture of speech, of the whole concept that speech has evolved just like men have evolved. And the reality is, the older the language, the more complex the language is. That's really remarkable, you know. I mean, the evolutionary view of language is that there were two cavemen, and one of them said, ugh. And the other one said, ugh. And one of them said, ugh. And the other one said, ugh. And one of them said, ugh. And the other one said, ugh. And the first one said, ugh, ugh. And the second one says, quit changing the subjects. And so that's not where it comes from. English is much more simpler than it was when most of you were born. Kids today do not know the subjunctive mood. Somebody said, I heard of that back in the sixth grade. What is it? It's not used anymore. Doesn't exist. It's a part of English. And, you know, and it's the reason that properly spoken, you don't say, if he was here, he would do this. Subjunctive mood demands you say, if he were here. Not if I was you, if I were you. Where'd that go? It went out the window. You know, about the time, you know, 10th, 11th grade, I finally got a hold of it. They stopped using it. And I am, me and my son Gary are the last holdouts on the subjunctive mood. There may be some others who are holding on to it. But if I were, simplified. Now, if you don't believe that, think about what's happening to spelling in America. You want to talk about text messaging? You know, everything, absolutely everything is abbreviated. My daughter teaches over at Jackson Christian. And any time a child uses one of those abbreviations in some paper the child turns in, she counts off double. Because you'll never learn to spell if you're allowed to spell words anyway. Who was it? They said, was it Mark Twain? I feel sorry for any man that's so ignorant he can only spell a word one way. I love that. Yes, his hand up. Yes, yes. Doing away with cursive writing. How are you going to read the Constitution if you don't have cursive writing? That's another simplification. It's the dumbing down of language. Now, where does language start? Well, I have no idea what language Adam and Eve spoke. You know, in my mind, God speaks English because when I read it, that's English. The day you're allowed to eat of every fruit in every tree in this garden. What's that? That's English. So God must have spoken English, whatever language He spoke. And there's Genesis 11, and there's the promise with Abraham and everything that is involved. I'm not going to do a survey of the Old Testament. What we're trying to do is to introduce the two covenants. Now to do that, let's look at the first five books in a quick way, and then I want us to get over to the kind of religion they had during what we call the patriarchal age. I don't know how far we'll get. First book is called Genesis. Why is it named Genesis? Why in 250 BC, when the Septuagint was made, and they needed to give a name to this book, they named it Genesis. Well, the why is because the Hebrew Bible at the top of that had the word beginning written in Hebrew. So they're translating it, and so they named this book Genesis, and our language is just filled with the Greek words. And so obviously it's a whole lot easier for us to know the genesis of the Bible if the first book is Genesis. Second book of the Bible. There are 50 chapters covered in the book of Genesis. About how many years are covered in the book of Genesis? If I say about, there is no, any number you make, any number you give is close enough. You know, if you want to say five, And I say, about how many? Well, compared to 25 billion, five is about how many years? About how many years found in the book of Genesis? Well, from the creation until the flood. You can figure that out. All you got to do is to read how old Adam was when he had his son, how old Adam, Seth, Enos, Cainah, Mahalalel. You just keep adding up this genealogy. And somebody said, are there skips in the genealogy? Well, the New Testament says Enoch is the seventh from Adam. So by divine record, we know from Adam down to Enoch, there are only seven generations. And so you can just keep adding it up. And then the flood came in the 600th year of Noah's life. And so you can know specifically how many years there were from Adam until until the coming of the flood. Anybody know that number by any chance? Very good. There's a good about over here. And somebody said, what, 1700 back here? I think I heard a number like that. What did you say, Puckett? About 1,651 years. Okay. He doesn't want more than that. He doesn't want to be specific. It is 1,656 years, okay? And that's the number of years. And so you come out of the flood. Noah lives 350 years after the flood. But after the flood, life expectancy just clamps down. Interesting study sometime is how many generations did Noah know? Noah knew his sons. Did he know his grandsons? Did he know his great-grandsons? How close does Noah get to Abraham? That's not our purpose in this class, is to encourage you to sit down and study the Bible. I just don't know how to study. If you love math, do that. You love genealogy, do that. You can figure out how close Noah got to knowing Abraham. Where does Abraham's faith come from? Well, is it possible that he was within three generations of Noah? Is it possible that that Terah knew Noah? Is it possible that, I have to start with Adam to get all the way down to number 18. But is it possible that Abraham's grandfather knew Noah? And that's a fun thing to do, is to figure that. I had breakfast with Chet, and he and I were talking about where does Joseph's faith come from? Jacob, his father, knew Abraham for 15 years. There's that overlap. And so here's Joseph, 17 years of age, and he's down to the land of Egypt. He said, I cannot sin against God. Where'd that come from? Well, his daddy knew Abraham for 15 years. And so that's a part of how they worship God, by the way, a little bit ahead of ourselves. Second book of the Bible. Well, it covers about 2,500, well, covers over 2,000 years. It depends where you put the 400 years down to the land of Egypt, whether you count it in the book of Genesis or whether you add it starting in the book of Exodus. But it's really about 2,500 years from in one book. 2,500 years of Bible history. And that's why you need to know the book of Genesis. You really, really need to know the order of the people who live there and what you learn from every one of those stories. And that's why we're teaching these stories. I'm down the hallway down here. It's because it gives us an understanding of God. And Chet, when he was down here last time, said something that I have thought about again, thought about working on this sermon this morning, is why did God put that story in the Bible? Of all of the events that happened, why did he put that story in the Bible? And the discussion we had, and I don't remember much at all, but when you say something that is as weird as what you said, it sticks in there. Chet Brown says, and I believe that's right, God put the story of Noah in the Bible so we'd know the importance of baptism. What? Yes. 1 Peter chapter 3 talks about Noah being saved by water, and in a like figure, baptism saves us. God showed in the flood the judgment of God and salvation by water so that someday he could write the New Testament and said, you want to understand the importance of baptism? Go back and look at the flood. And Chet, since you've said that, almost every time I read the Bible, why is this story in the Bible? Why is the story about the woman who washed Jesus's, who anointed Jesus? Why is that story in the Bible? That's what I'm going to preach about after a while. Why is it there? There are many other signs. Truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, not written in this book. If everything he ever did was written in this book, the world could not contain. Why did God put that one story in the Bible? And so when I read the book of Genesis, I thought, why on earth is this story here? And there's some weird, really weird stories in there. Now then, 2,500 years, you get to the book of Exodus. Anybody want to guess why what the word Exodus is all about? If I can give you a clue, just look right above that door that's back over there. That might help you. It's called Exodus because of that word above the door over there. Exodus means what? See, you can define a word using the word. I'm telling you, those teachers were wrong. They wouldn't let me define a word using the word. Exodus means exiting. Isn't that great? And that's what it's the exiting from what? Exiting from the land of Egypt. That's why. And what's in the book of Exodus? Exiting. What's in the book of Genesis? Genesis. What's in Exodus? Exiting. And that's why that book has that name. Now, There's a line of demarcation. Look in Exodus chapter 20. Look in Exodus chapter 20 and contrast chapter 20 with chapter 21. You have your pew Bible, that's on page 68. This Bible, by the way, has in bold print paragraphs highlighted with words. Now recognize, the Holy Spirit, God did not put those paragraph headings there. I am glad they're there. Because if I'm looking for something, I don't have to just look. Like in the old King James, the Bible I grew up reading, you have to just scan down and look for every. It's divided into paragraphs. And so the heading under chapter 20 is what? Ten Commandments. And then look in chapter 21. All of a sudden it's not Ten Commandments. What is it? First heading in chapter 21. How to deal with slaves. What about between verse 11 and verse 12? Violence. What about verse 27, 28? Animal control. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, all of a sudden, you're in a historical part of the book, and you know about the Exodus, and you read about all of that, and you get to Mount Sinai, and the Ten Commandments are given there. And you've got all of these things that are, and then all of a sudden you get to that back half of the book of Exodus, and I'm not saying these things are not important. You know, when they arrive at Mount Sinai, it's not just that they get the Ten Commandments. They're actually, I don't have a weird way to put these in here, I just memorized them for a test and they stuck. Four things that happen at Mount Sinai. One is given to the Ten Commandments. You want to guess the second one? It's what happened when Moses is up in the mountain. It's a golden calf. That's a critical thing that happened because of the worship of idols the rest of the way through the book. The third thing is the building of the tabernacle. And so the last part of the book of Exodus is where they build the tabernacle. Now, if you'll flip through this and you get through... look in chapter 35. Chapter 35, that's on page 83. What you got? You've got the Sabbath regulations. You've got the tabernacle. You've got the tabernacle. Turn to page chapter 36. Look after verse 7. What do you got? Building of the tabernacle. Chapter 37, that's on page 85. The Ark of the Testimony, I'm looking at the bold print. You with me on that? See what I'm reading? The Table of Showbread, the Golden Lampstands, turn the page, the Altar of Incense. Chapter 38, the Making of the Altar of Burnt Offerings. two verses. Well, the bronze laver, the court of the tabernacle, the materials of the tabernacle, chapter 39, the making of the garments of the priesthood, and you get to chapter 40, the tabernacle is erected and arranged. What's in the book of Exodus? Exiting, and it covers 1 year. Now, you've got to do something with those first 80 years of Moses' life, and so it really covers, I guess, 81 years, if you want to talk about three incidences in the life of Moses, when he was born and hidden, when he's 40 years of age, and when he's 80 years of age. And so it covers 41 years. When you get to the end of the book of Exodus, Moses is 81 years old. He's only been about a year from the time they've left the land of Egypt until they're down at Mount Sinai, they build the tabernacle. Now, because we're going to talk about the two covenants, we need to understand with the erecting of this tabernacle and that table of showbread and the altar of incense, now all of a sudden, religion has changed. The covenant that God has with man has changed. There's a new covenant that begins at, and that's not Dan affirming it. I'll show you the verse in a little while. The verse that says, a new covenant began at Mount Sinai, and that covenant at Mount Sinai did not exist before Mount Sinai. And what we're talking about is the Ten Commandments. Now, don't you dare believe that. I might be a false prophet. But if we read a verse from the Bible that says that, then it is not Dan who says it, it's God who says it. And the argumentation that one has is not an argumentation between Dan and something Dan has been taught, you know, and so he's mouthing something that he hadn't studied for himself. You study it for yourself and read what God says about it. And that's the critical part of preaching and teaching and everything that's in there. Third book, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. What's Leviticus all about? Isn't that amazing? Chapter 1 says what? Burnt offering. What about chapter 2? I wonder what's in chapter 2. Grain offering, chapter 3. Peace offering, chapter 4. Sin offering, chapter 5. Trespass offering, chapter 6. You have to drop down a little bit, you know, 5 or 6 verses in there. What have you got? Burnt offering, same chapter. Grain offering, turn the page. Sin offering, chapter 7. Trespass offering, peace offerings. Wonder what the book of Leviticus is all about. What about offerings? We've looked at 7 chapters, and the heading says, here's how you offer the burnt offering. Here's how you offer the sin offering. Here's how you offer the trespass offering. And for us, that's almost a boring study. It wasn't boring to them. Do you know the first book of the first book Jewish families taught their children? You guessed it, and it sounds weird. They started with Leviticus. You know why? You can't learn it unless you learn it. It's like learning to ride a bicycle. You know, there's a time where you've got to learn about what animals to do at this time and all the rest and everything. Now, heard of one man, he said, I'm going to read the Bible through. He said, I read Genesis, I read Exodus, and I read Leave It to Cuss, and that's what I did. I mean, he got as far as Leviticus, and he was just so bored. You know, and it is boring. I don't mean it's not important, but if you ask me what part of what animal did you offer for the burnt offering, I don't know. You know, what part of that animal was all of the animal, and did they leave the skin on the animal? And what on earth is a grain offering? What grain? How much? Do I burn the grain? You know, do I bring it before God with that grain there, and it pops, and so God's got popcorn? I mean, is this what the grain offering is. And I'm not, I sound like I'm mocking Leviticus. I am not. But it's an interesting book in many respects. And we don't have time to do with it what we did in a recent sermon where, was it last Sunday or Sunday before last? I asked you to read how many times God said, as the Lord commanded, as the Lord commanded, as the Lord commanded. And Chet, you cannot help when you get to chapter 10 about Nadab and Abihu. Why is that story in the Bible? Well, it's the first time anybody's offered incense to God. In the book of Exodus, at the end of that book, they built the tabernacle. When you get to chapter 8, now they purify Nadab and Abihu and anoint them so they can be priests. And so chapter 10 is the first time they serve God as priests. And God says, get it right. As I commanded. Now then, look at chapter 11. Chapter 11 is interesting because it helps us understand a lot of things that are in the Bible. Chapter 11 is about what? Foods permitted and forbidden. What did you call the animals that they were allowed to eat? How are they described? Clean animals. What about the animals they were not allowed to eat? Unclean. Now, it's interesting. This is not the first time you read about clean and unclean animals. You got to go all the way back to the days of Noah. And so God specified in some way to Noah, and so he carried the unclean animals in by two and the clean animal in by sevens. That's likely seven couples. You'll read that carefully. When I was a kid, I figured out that when he came out and offered one of the clean animals, that was the seventh one he offered, okay? And I had it all figured out. Now we got the male and the female and the odd ones out because he got offered as a sacrifice. I was a great, great Bible scholar when I was younger, except I was scholarly wrong, if that makes sense, you know. It does not say he carried the unclean animals in by two. It says he carried two of the unclean animals. Noah, he carried the clean animals in by sevens, the male and the female. So it evidently means seven couples. And so there were actually more animals in the ark than sometimes we think. And that's sort of immaterial. But it's only when you get to this book that you learn how God defines clean animals and unclean animals. Two characteristics of a four-footed animal that have made them allowed to eat it or not eat it. What were those two characteristics? What makes an animal a clean animal? Instead of just a long list, and there is a rather long list, he gives two characteristics of animals that are clean animals, and therefore the Jews could eat them. A cloven foot. When I say cloven foot, you got a picture? Yeah, somebody did like this. It's like this. You know what a horse's hoof looks like? Is it cloven? Cloven meaning split, you know. There appeared in them cloven tongues. We don't use that word very much. It's more of a Bible word. Split hoof animal. Couldn't eat a horse. Why? Doesn't have a cloven foot. And the other thing that made an animal clean was what? And I wanted to hear you say whether you said cud or could, okay? You know, I grew up in Alabama. They chewed tobacco too. But I mean, I call it chewing the cud. And so I get out of the South, and they chew the cud. And so it's creek and crick. I mean, it's tomato tomato. It's a whole bunch. It's foreign languages that we speak. And they had to chew the cud. What does that mean? It means they eat the food and then they regurgitate it and chew it again. We do a very similar thing with Wrigley spearmint gum. I don't know if that's where that comes from. I don't know where chewing tobacco comes from. But doesn't it just feel good to chew? Do you enjoy eating food and the taste of food more than you do just the anticipation of it and the eating of it? Yeah. But now, listen, there may be health reasons involved in this. Animals that do not chew the cud are animals that sometimes carry a lot of disease. And so there may have been a secondary reason. I'm not saying that God did this for health reasons. But as a byproduct of what God says, you know, they would not likely get trichinosis. Why? Did not eat pork. Did not eat pork. And aren't you glad that God did away with the food laws? Did you have bacon this morning or sausage? I mean, you understand. But the Jews could not eat pigs, could not eat the hogs, okay? And there were other animals they could not eat. And then there's the birds that are there. And the fish they were allowed to eat. What characteristics did the fish have to have? Had to have scales on it, right? Had to have scales. You couldn't eat a catfish. You could not eat. You can. But back then, they could not eat catfish. Did you know that? Why? Because it didn't have scales on it. And so he got involved in the clash. I let him participate. All right. Now then, look at chapter 12. What do you got? Childbirth. Chapter 13, leprosy. Turn the page. Chapter 14, ritual for cleansing lepers. Chapter 15, bodily discharges. Interesting. God told them when you're having a bowel movement out there in the wilderness, you take a shovel and you dig a trench and you do your bodily functions and then you cover it up. Isn't that amazing? I think it's in Deuteronomy 24. Maybe it's the latter part of Deuteronomy 23, and it's interesting because it says God is walking among you. I find that remarkable. I mean, that's not the reason. That's sort of this byproduct, but it says the Lord is in your midst, and so you cover that mess up. Health laws. You think about what happens in Haiti whenever that earthquake is there, and they have no way to get rid of all of that human waste. They had very little waste before that time, but all of a sudden, disease just spreads rampant. And so you've got laws that are as diverse as that. Now, when you get to chapter 16 in the book of Leviticus, you get to a really important section because law concerning childbirth, important to the Jews, that's why baby Jesus was carried to the temple. And that's where Anna the prophetess and Simeon the old prophet saw him. Why is that? It's because Leviticus told them to do that. And they had to do that. And there were all kinds of laws about that. But when you get to chapter 16, you get to the Day of Atonement. And we're likely going to spend some time, if we have time, looking at that feast day because that's a critical, critical feast day. Chapter 17, Sanctity of Blood. Chapter 18, Morality. And chapter 18 is the chapter that defines sexual immorality. And if you want the clearest verse in reference to homosexuality, look at verse 22. You shall not lie with a man as with a woman. It is an abomination. You cannot make it any plainer, cannot make it any clearer, any plainer than that. I don't think either of them's here. Is Jen here? Is Darren here? Darren and Jen and who's the other one? Bobo happened to go to Disney, Gay Weekend. Are you aware of Gay Weekend up there? It just happened. They come en masse and take over Orlando for about a week. It happened last week. It's happening today. I think today is the end of it. So they got up there, they're not aware of Gay Weekend, and they walk in the park, and here's all of this PDA, public display of affection. They've got their tickets, they've spent their money. What on earth are we going to do? I love these young people, you know. Dirk, I don't know whether you or Dorita put that in him, but I'm telling you, I love what he did. I love what Bobo did. I really love what Bobo did. It's interesting. Dirk and Bobo went to Walmart and got some... Dirk and Darren, yes. Dirk didn't go. Dirk was already, Darren and Bobo went and bought plain, I think they were yellow shirts, and bought a can of black spray paint and sprayed on the shirts they were wearing, Leviticus 18:22. On the back, they sprayed, "Look it up." So they had more than one day ticket. So they go back the second day walking all over Disney with these shirts on, and people are coming, "What's this Lev 18 all about?" Leviticus 18:22. I love the courage of our young people. I love the ingenuity they have in trying to, and what a message they gave. Really powerful. And Leviticus 18:22, is the verse that specifies what it is. Now, we don't live under the Old Testament, and so we got to get to the New Testament, know if that applies to us. And it's not that this law was brought over into the New Testament. That concept of anything from the Old Testament being brought over into the New Testament is a wrong concept. Wasn't brought over. That law had a specific time and place that it ended, and at the end of that, it was over. Nothing was brought over, and there's a new covenant. And we've got to get that concept. Look through the rest of this, and it's offerings and feast days and Sabbath laws and the year of Jubilee. What's the book of Leviticus about? Well, it's named Leviticus because of the tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi was the priestly tribe. And so Leviticus is a book written for all of the Jews, but it was the specific guidelines of the tribe of Levi. Genesis beginning, Exodus exiting, Leviticus, tribe of Levi. Got to get this. How much? Got 1 minute? Tribe of Numbers. What is Numbers all about? How would you define Numbers? You want to define it using the word? Numbers. That's good. If you'll think of census, that's what happens every 10 years in America. They take a census so they can number the people. And so at Mount Sinai, they counted the number of people that were at Mount Sinai. They counted the number of men above 20 years of age capable of going to war, not older people, younger men above 20 capable of going to war, excluding the tribe of Levi. And there were over 600,000 young men above 20. Now, the name of the book is not number, it's plural, numbers. And so they numbered them at Mount Sinai. They go into the wilderness. How many years are they in that wilderness? 40 years in the wilderness. At the end of 40 years, they number the people again. That's why it is not number. It's numbers. And that's how we know that of those 603,550, only two of those who were numbered went into the promised land. They counted them. 40 years later, because of disobedience in the wilderness, there are 600,000 young men who were numbered the first time who died in the wilderness. There were, and you can figure this out, and I'm making this number up, but there were some, I did the math one time, there's something like 35 or 40 funerals every day. When you stop and think about that, that wilderness had to be covered with carcasses of individuals dying. That's it. We'll then get to Deuteronomy. We'll start there. Next week we'll have a special study, and then the week after that we'll be back in here again. Thank you.